case is taken under advisement and the court will proceed to the sixth case, Sizoff versus the INS. Mr. Berman, or is that Sizoff?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, probably Sizoff.
If you're not, we'll go with Sizoff.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Judge Flom, Judge Easterbrook, Judge Wood, my name is Stephen Berman, counsel. My name is Stephen Berman, and I represent the petitioners Oleg, Elena, and Sergei Sizoff. This is a husband, wife, and child. The matter comes before the court on petition for review of the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals. The petitioners are natives, well, they're from different countries. The lead petitioner is Oleg Sizoff. He is a Russian ethnic. He was born in Kazakhstan, and during the Soviet era, he relocated to Russia, where he lived for 10 years before he came to the United States. He requested asylum from Russia based on the fact that he simply had no permission to live anywhere. They wouldn't give him a propiska. It was withdrawn when his employer, when his employment was terminated, and he had no way of getting one. He lived like an illegal immigrant in his own country.
Mr. Berman, I'm interested to know to what extent, if at all, you're making a claim here that the Sizoffs are, in effect, stateless. Do you have any evidence to show that Kazakhstan, for example, would not allow him to return since he was born there and family lives there and there is a substantial Russian ethnic minority in Kazakhstan?
Your Honor,
I don't think he wants to live there, and I'm not sure that you or I would move there either, but if that's where he has a right to live, isn't it acceptable for the State Department to send him there?
Your Honor, I appreciate the question. I do want to clarify this issue because we shouldn't have a moving target here. A person doesn't have to claim asylum from every country that they ever lived in. He may very well be eligible for citizenship or to be admitted to Kazakhstan.
Wasn't that one of the alternatives that was listed in the order? I thought I remembered that.
It is, Your Honor.
Yeah,
yes,
that was a backup. I mean, he would be sent to, or they, the family, I guess we should think of them together, to Russia. But there's a whole procedure that's gone through, right, to make sure that the destination country will actually admit the person.
Indeed there is, and so we should get to what the proper analysis is. If Mr. Sizoff is in danger of persecution in his last country of residence, Russia, he is eligible for asylum. That makes him eligible. Now, the Immigration Service would have the burden of proof that he can safely relocate elsewhere. That's never been presented. In fact, there's substantial evidence that Kazakhstan is not a place that he could reasonably be expected to relocate. Why? His town is in the middle of the desert. He's a Russian ethnic and a Christian, and it's in a country that officially, as a matter of law, does discriminate against such people, and where he very well, it would appear, would face the exact same problems. He's not entitled to a propiska. He was not living there at the time the country was founded in 1991. He was in the United States. He doesn't have any permission to live or work anywhere there. He would be an illegal immigrant there, just as he'd be an illegal immigrant in Russia. So we don't believe that the Immigration Service could meet its burden of proof on that issue. I don't believe that the Immigration Court ever addressed that issue, nor did the Board. In fact, there was no analysis at all. With regard to the claim of persecution, as long as we're discussing it, I don't believe that the Immigration Court ever specifically addressed whether this is a valid claim for asylum. They didn't address whether being a Russian from Central Asia, a group which the State Department says is targeted for selective prosecution, that they can't get work permits, they can't get residency permits, the law is going to be enforced against them to make them live, like in their own words, in the State Department, like illegal immigrants in Russia. Okay, whether that's a valid basis for asylum, whether that amounts to persecution under Borka, is that sufficient economic disadvantage to amount to persecution? The judge doesn't mention it, nor does the Board of Immigration Appeals. We respectfully contend that they missed the issue. They simply missed the issue. And that's why we ask this court to remand it. They should face this head on. Does this comply with Borka? Is this sufficient economic disadvantage to amount to persecution. We contend if this is not, I don't know what is. It can't get much worse than this. This, we believe, easily complies with Borka and that he is eligible for asylum. The board didn't discuss it, nor did the judge. Now, the standard for what constitutes persecution under Borka is whether there is a deliberate imposition of a substantial economic disadvantage. The applicants in this case state they were dependent completely on their employers for a permit to live in the city. Without that, and even with that, they were forced out of their residence in the middle of the winter in St. Petersburg, which borders the Arctic Circle.
Right, but could I ask you this? Is it the implication of your position then that anybody who's unsuccessful in getting the propiskas in Russia is entitled to asylum here? Because I really can't see why whatever may have happened as a result of religious beliefs during the Soviet period, why being a member of the Russian Orthodox Church, which is now a very dominant institution in Russia, puts one at risk of future persecution.
That doesn't. That for sure doesn't.
Really
we don't
not.
Contend that.
And so that's why, you know, if it's just having an inability to get the appropriate residence permits, as you yourself have said, that's the case with many people at this point. Are they all entitled to asylum here?
Your Honor, the record through the State Department country reports and profile of country conditions, it states that this applies to non-residents. That means only the
everybody,
people living there.
Everybody seeking asylum is a non-resident of Russia.
I don't believe that's
by
true,
definition,
Your Honor.
They are in the United States. Right? One cannot, the propiska is a wonderful bureaucratic device so that nobody can do anything. You can never move to any place else because you can't get a propiska until you're there, and you can't move there until you've got a propiska.
Exactly.
Fine. Russia has this bizarre bureaucracy, which it's had probably back to the czars. But the implication, as Judge Wood said, is that if this is a reason for asylum, every Russian living in the United States, as a matter of law, is entitled to asylum.
I want to address
that. Position.
It's not.
Then why not?
Because it's more limited. The State Department profile says that the law is, dry throat, it's selectively applied to people from Central Asia and people from the Caucasus. They're targeted because the Russians don't like them. And the applicants here, that's where they're from, and they testified that people dislike them. They called them a pejorative term, a chuchmek, whatever that
look,
is.
Is it or is it not the rule in Russia that you can't get a propiska until you already have a job in the city to which you would move?
That doesn't apply to everyone. Once a person's got 10 years, they have a permanent propiska. That's the testimony and that's the law. When they've got a permanent propiska, they can switch employers and they don't need a permit from the city. These people are not in that state, and they are in the group that's targeted for selective application of the law. So we believe it is a very limited group that's targeted in this way, and these people are members of that group. If I may reserve for rebuttal again.
Sure, Ms. Berman.
Thank you.
Ms. Friedman.
Good morning. Nancy Friedman for respondent. I'd like to begin by asking...
Who is the respondent at the moment, by the way?
Let me see. I guess this was a transitional rule case. So it's
no,
still
no,
the immigration.
The INS is in the process of being reorganized.
Yes. But that hasn't happened, so the respondent is still the Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Even though the Department of Homeland Security is now officially in existence?
I believe so, Your Honor. I haven't heard otherwise from our client that anything has changed yet. Perhaps it will sometime soon, but I don't believe that makes any change to this case, at least. I believe the board's decision was supported by substantial evidence, and perhaps I can begin by referring to what I think is probably the most helpful case for this court, the Bucur case, B-U-C-U-R. Many of the cases sound similar, but I feel Judge Posner summed it up better than I could.
It really doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions of this court.
Yes, Your Honor. And what the court said is that The statute referring to the asylum statute was designed as a filter, and the mesh would be too broad if every foreign victim of discrimination in his homeland were eligible for asylum. And that's very similar to the situation here. Also, as the court in Bucher said, that all this is most unpleasant, but the board was within its authority because what petitioners are describing here is certainly a case of economic deprivation, of harassment, of discrimination.
And fear of future such moves. All of these people from the former Soviet Union who are not actually from Russia, who don't match up with the current political alignment, are in a very difficult situation because the Russians don't necessarily want all of the old Russian nationals to move there en masse because they can't cope with it. The former republics, which went through political changes, are a real mishmash of policies and state religions and all sorts of things. And I guess the fear of these people is that they will wind up literally on the streets because the Russians will say, we don't want you. You look like you're from either Germany or Ukraine and Kazakhstan, and we're not going to give you a permit. You can't work legally, and you can't do anything else legally. And this all eventually can be traced back to the former, I presume, not continuing religious discrimination against members of the Russian Orthodox Church. It's a very difficult situation to put people in, and it's distressing to think that the United States is sending them back to live in gutters.
No question, Your Honor. I couldn't stand here and argue that it's not a very difficult situation. But what we are saying is that the board's decision was supported because, as the immigration judge and the board affirmed, stated, this such is not persecution under the statute. And this court has recognized that itself in very similar situations of economic hardship and discrimination and harassment and difficulty finding employment and having to relocate. Still, that does not rise to the level of persecution. As this court has stated many times, persecution is a matter of degree here. And while the case is certainly unfortunate, and no one could say they didn't suffer hardship in their situation, but to go back to the question you asked earlier, I don't believe anyone argued that they could not receive travel documents to Kazakhstan or Russia. I don't.
What steps does the government take to make sure that when we remove somebody, they will actually be admitted into the country to which they're being sent?
Well, Your Honor, the Immigration Service can't remove someone if you say, you know, physically put them on the plane.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen until they have travel documents
from the destination country.
Exactly, and that's the difficulty the service runs into in many situations, so people remain here until they have those documents. Certainly, it doesn't have to be from the country that they desire or left. What we have here is a case of economic harm, and basically Mr. Sitsoff left his job because, as the immigration judge stated, he quit his job because of his disenchantment with the corruption and rampant stealing and other practices that were going on that he could not go along with. I disagree with the fact he was fired because what he said specifically was that he left his job and then they had difficulty with the residence permit. So unless the court has any other questions, I will ask that the board decision be upheld. Thank you.
Just one more effort to figure out who you represent?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a provision in the Homeland Security Act that says that the Immigration and Naturalization Service is abolished, and all of its functions are relevant functions here are transferred to the Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration Services. And if the department is now in existence, doesn't it follow that your client is the Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration Services?
I'm not certain at this point, Your Honor, but I just honestly haven't seen it come up
maybe
yet.
Maybe that's one of the things that isn't happening for 90 days from the effective date of the Act, and we're still within the 90-day window.
I believe that's true. I think it's only been in the last few weeks or so.
Would you file something telling us who is actually exercising this authority these days, and when the actual transfer from the INS to the Bureau of Citizenship and Immigration Services occurs?
Certainly, Your Honor, if I might have 10 days or so to check with the client itself. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Berman.
Your Honor, if I may respond to some of the arguments raised. The first issue is substantial evidence. We don't believe there's any question of fact in this case. I think the facts are uncontested. This case involves strictly an interpretation of law. Did the facts, as stated, comply with this court's decision in Borca? Is that level of economic mistreatment bad enough to be persecution if it's done on account of their national origin? We contend it is. And so substantial evidence is not the proper standard. There's plenary review over decisions of law. Secondly, I don't think that the board nor the judge ever addressed the question of law, and that's why we didn't ask their decision to be reversed. We asked it to be vacated and remanded. We think they missed the issue. Genuinely, looking at their decisions, I don't think that they caught what the issue was before them.
Ms. Berman, does the record have any in-country assessment of the economic situation for returnees such as the CISOF in let's say 2000 or 2001. I mean, we're working off a 91, now 12-year-old or 11-plus-year-old assessment of economic duress. Do we have any in-country reports from Russia on people who are in the former republics now?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Did the IJ have anything?
Oh, he did. The profile of country conditions, which comes along with the...
Yeah, but did that have a date on that profile?
I don't know for sure, but they're generally very outdated, even at the time of trial.
Well, I understand that.
I would guess 93 to 95. I'd have to check the record. I have the record.
All right, well...
It's old. Whatever it is, it's old.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will stand in recess.